So I don't expect too many people today. I imagine many of the women will be celebrating Mother's Day with their husbands. So anyway, I think it's, yeah. Yeah, guys, just get comfortable in your seat. So your shoulders are relaxed, your back is straight. Your head is balanced evenly on your neck. And you can let your eyes close if you like. And then let your body breathe itself. And while the body breathes itself, relax into awareness. And let the ground beneath you become completely pure, as level and as soft as the palm of a hand, but with the blue of lapis lazuli crisscrossed with gold. Then imagine that the space above you and around you is filled with offerings, like those of Manjushri and Samantabhadra. But imagine yourself surrounded by all sentient beings. And in the space in front of you appears a lion throne, which has cushions of lotus, sun, and moon. And on the moon cushion is sitting Lama Tsongkhapa. And he's the essence of every kind teacher you've ever come into contact with. And he is surrounded by the assembly of the direct and indirect teachers. So here we have Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, deities, hearers, solitary realizers, Dharma protectors. Each of them have bodies of light. Every one of them is studying Dharma. And you recollect how lucky you are to still be alive today. And being alive, we have the leisure and opportunity to attain our own spiritual goals. But it's important that we act now. Things do not exist as they seem to. And though things are not quite right, we have met a spiritual friend. And this friend is leading us in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones. So now, imagine yourself to be as clear as a deity holding a vajra and bell. And you think that you're going to make the offering of practice purely for the benefit of all sentient beings. And in recollecting that the Buddha is the best of all teachers who taught dependent arising. Join me in saying, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Then from the heart of Lama Tsongkhapa and the spiritual beings surrounding him, lights and nectars stream down from the heart of each of them. And these lights and nectars dissolve into yourself and all living beings who surround you. Negative karmas and obstructions are dissolved completely, washed away. And this increases your lifespan, makes room for greater virtue and Dharma realizations. And that virtue that you do have, those realizations that you do have, they are increased. They're cleansed by love and compassion and empowered with wisdom. You recollect the four immeasurable thoughts and you decide to develop these yourself and to establish all beings within the four boundless states. And to affirm this, you say, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. From the heart of Lama Tsongkhapa and the spiritual community, lights and nectars stream down, and these dissolve into yourself and all living beings. And negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Your health and lifespan are increased, along with your virtues and Dharma realizations. And just relax into the purity. From this calm, pure state of mind, you invite the field for accumulating merit, and they appear. And you say in front of them, reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. So we've purified our body, speech and mind, and we've accumulated merit. And to prevent ourselves clinging from these two as truly existent, we imagine that our own body, our enjoyments and our merits are utterly transformed to reappear as a pure land where all beings can take teachings. And we offer this pure land to Lama Tsongkhapa and his entourage. And we say that this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamnaryatayami. The offering has been released, and Lama Tsongkhapa accepts it with delight, and he smiles at us, and we look up and meet his gaze. And in the eyes of the Lama, we find immense humility and kindness and acceptance. The merit field dissolves into Lama Tsongkhapa's heart. It becomes very small, shrinking in size, but yet moving swiftly through space to abide above the crown of your head. It descends, enters the crown of your head, and comes down to your heart. And there his radiance begins to expand, filling your body and mind with light. And the light goes out to the 10 directions of space. And yourself and all beings are now abiding within an enlightened state. There are no boundaries. Everything is empty and present at the very same time. Within the vast emptiness, you hear the the mantra. Which is the path for enlightenment. And hearing it, you start to recite it. So this mantra goes, Ama Guru Vajradhara Sumati Keti Siddhi Hum. 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 Now the light withdraws from the 10 directions of space and re-enters your heart. You feel your own body breathing itself. You can feel the surface that you're sitting upon. And you realize that this is the meditation of imagination, which has imprinted your own mind to put in place the stages of the path and its result. This is a good thing. So you accept the goodness of this practice, and then breathing in deeply through your nostrils, exhale through your mouth, and let your eyes flutter open. So start to blink a few times, move your shoulders, move your hands. If you want to, have a sip of water and just make yourself present. So today we're going to complete the questions of 17. So we only have 8 left. Last fortnight ago we did the other 12. And basically these 8 questions are sort of divided up into 2 sections. There's some questions here about whether the middle way consequence have any tenets at all. What do they assert anything? Or do they just show the absurd consequences of others? And if they do assert something, what is it that they assert? We're going to also look at the autonomy system and what this term, the perspective of others, means. So perhaps just a quick overview from here, and then we'll go into each question. So the first part, does the middleway consequence assert anything at all? And if so, what? When others say that the middleway consequence do not assert anything, the middleway consequence refute that. They reject it. They don't accept this assertion. So the middleway consequence and middleway followers do make assertions. Otherwise, they couldn't even claim that they don't make assertions. They accept the theses of others and using them themselves. They use reason and inference and they accept them. But they reject that theses, reasons, and inferences exist inherently or autonomously. There are also some middleway consequentialists holding positions that actually contradict themselves. And this is what Lama Tsongkhapa also points out, and you'll see that in the questions. In terms of the autonomy and the perspective of others, autonomous refers to inherent existence or existence by way of its own character. So that's a nice little thing to hold on to. You know, whenever you see this term, you'll know, autonomy, not by existence of other, means existing by way of its own character. So the middleway consequences again, do not accept correct reasons which have an autonomous existence. They do accept correct reasons fulfilling the three modes, but not that these three modes exist by way of their own character. So let's go, and basically this is what these eight questions will be about and the answers in them.
So Eddie?
Yes, Caroline?
Just clarification. So when you say the autonomous say inherent existence or existence by way of its own character, that's at the relative conventional existence. That's it's right. Not ultimate, is it?
That's right. Yep, that's right.
Thanks.
That's right. Yeah. So there are three modes in a reason are a conventionality, and these phenomena must exist inherently. Ultimately, they're not. That's right. Yeah. Okay, let's have a look at some of these questions. So our first question asks, what is the difference between the middleway autonomists and the middleway consequentialists regarding the two methods? So, Bruce, would you like to have a shot at this first?
Now, is this to do with proofs?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah. So I've got that the autonomous don't use proofs or can't use proofs and the consequentialists do.
Oh, okay. So how did you come to that, Bruce?
Good question.
okay, that's all right. If you're unsure.
Yeah, I'm very unsure. Yeah.
That's all right. Mr. Chris, what do you think?
Eddie, I have that the autonomists do state a proof or a reason to follow, that one in which the thesis is explicitly stated in order to develop that inference. So they do use proofs and reasons, but they still hold on to an inherent existence. Okay. However, middleway consequence, they use consequences to express a contradiction. So a person can develop that inference.
Okay, that's good. That's nice. Yeah. Caroline?
I don't know, but from what I recall, and I can't recall a lot, it was something about also how they use valid cognitions and requiring the three proofs to be valid cognition, and they say the consequentialists don't use valid cognition because of only what people say or something.
Sure, that's right. You've got a part that's It's important. So Delma, I can't see you, but do you have anything to offer or to add to this? Okay, maybe not. So I'll put up this one. So Caroline's brought up this interesting piece of information. So I'm going to put middle way autonomous on this side, then the middle way consequences on the other. This is the thing, right? These valid cognitions, they exist by way of their own character. This is really important. And like you say, Carol, these are valid cognitions, you know, conventionally exist by way of their own character. And of course, along with that follows their types of reasoning, these autonomous syllogisms. So the reasoning is following from this because from their perspective, cognitions or knowing that is valid, this knowing exists by way of its own character, meaning inherently existent as it appears to us. And so the reasonings that they set up are autonomous. So with this answer, you've got these two parts. We know the simple one is one side relies on autonomous syllogisms and the other side is consequences. But then it's like, well, how come? You know, why are they doing that? And it comes back to the way of how phenomena are appearing to them, how conventional phenomena appear to them. And so the middle way autonomous is saying because they appear this way, like they are that way, it's valid. Middle way consequences, a little different. They say valid cognitions are empty of existing by way of their own character and are empty of inherent existence, but do exist dependently. And they rely, of course, upon consequential arguments, or what's called, you know, the reductio ad absurdum argument. And that the way they do that, this reductio ad absurdum argument, is by taking the position that, if you say these phenomena inherently exist, we can lead you into this strange consequence of that, an absurd consequence of that. So in brief, the Svatantrikas, or the middle way autonomists, rely on autonomous syllogisms where the subject, predicate, reason and example are known by an unmistaken consciousness that certifies their inherent existence. They believe that both parties in a debate must share a common understanding that all parts of a syllogism exist by way of their own character. And this approach assumes that the valid cognizers of both parties apprehend these objects as autonomously existent, or existent by way of their own character, or inherently existent. And of course, so, the way, yep, Caroline?
So just on that then, so is that why, so is it for them the importance of the conventionally existing by way of their own character and both parties agreeing because, and the importance is it's in by own character, because if it's not by its own character, how could two other people in the consequence school agree that you wouldn't? Yeah, there's something there about not, yeah, I don't know how to express it, but it's sort of, yeah, that they say the consequences, well, if you don't, if you, you both don't agree it's by its own character, then how can you actually agree on this existing or something?
Yeah, the middle way consequences, we don't need, you don't need to have by own character.
Mm.
Yeah. In fact, and if you did, then all these problems follow.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't, you know, they don't follow because phenomena don't inherently exist.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
In fact, yeah. Okay. See, the middle way consequentialists reject the autonomous syllogisms because they contain an inherent contradiction. If you're trying to disprove inherent existence using components that are assumed to inherently exist, you have already accepted what you're trying to refute. Right? So remember, these guys are quite prepared to refute inherent existence ultimately, but then they want to keep it conventionally, and they go, hang on a minute. There's contradiction here, isn't there? So the middleway consequences primarily use consequential arguments that show these contradictions in the opponent's position. Any agreement. Bruce.
Just checking that the contradiction is that by accepting existence conventionally, that they're accepting the concept of inherent existence, and that's
So they've already refuted it, haven't they? On the ultimate side, right? Yeah, that's right, Bruce. Okay, let's have a little look at our second question. So this is sort of okay for everybody. I mean, at least we get this idea of this autonomous. One guy goes autonomous syllogisms, while the other guy's going consequentialist. And you could say, yeah, okay, I get that. The other guys will also use syllogisms, but not that they exist autonomously. Now, the middleway consequence use syllogisms, don't they? They just say that these phenomena dependently exist, not by way of their own character. That's where they have the disagreement. And then there's also a disagreement on what they call a valid cognition. So the middleway autonomists are saying that these ordinary cognitions that we have of knowing, they're correct. They're appearing to exist by way of their own character. That's how they exist. And the primary reason for those is conventionalities that exist by way of their own character. They're thinking, you know, if they didn't, they wouldn't exist at all. That's why they have to exist by way of their own character, conventionally. Ultimately, they refute these phenomena. So in a way, again, like I said, this idea of if you're trying to disprove inherent existence, using components that are assumed to inherently exist. Problem. So let's have a look at this next question, which asks, why is it impossible to assert, as is said by some who call themselves followers of the middleway consequence school, that middleway consequences assert nothing, that they do not have assertions? So what's the first most obvious thing you could say here? There are a number of reasons you could put up for this, but what do you think is the most obvious one? And this is the one they often put across in the text. Chris?
Yeah, it's by asserting that you have no assertions, that it in itself is an assertion.
Yeah, that's right. So straight off, you have this contradictory position. That's right. To say, I have no assertions, or the middleway consequence assert nothing. That is an assertion. So this is saying it's sort of impossible to take that position. Not only that, it's impossible and it's wrong. So why is it wrong? Do the middleway consequence assert anything at all?
Dependent arising.
Bruce, yes, Bruce.
Dependent arising, emptiness.
That's right. They assert dependent arising and what's the other thing? What's the flip side of that?
Emptiness of inherent existence.
Yeah, the lack of inherent existence or the emptiness of inherent existence and therefore dependent arising. That's what they assert. Yep.
But they asserted in that, what do you call it, those syllogisms, you know, take a sprout, you know, it doesn't inherently exist because it's a dependent arising. I mean, they're all assertions.
Right. That's an assertion right there. That's right. So they do assert something. Yep, that's right, Carolyn. And not only that, you know, they rely on valid cognitions. So they say it is, middleway consequence is quite an interesting way of explaining what a valid cognition is and how these valid conventionally exist, what that actually means, you know. So it's a little bit different than the autonomous. So this last one, this other green one here, is very much like the very first one. You know, if you have nothing to say and you have no assertion whatsoever, then it's impossible for you to refute a wrong view of someone else. And that's what the middle quote way are doing, aren't they? They're refuting the autonomous. In fact, they refute everybody below them. So those are assertions being made. They're sort of saying, no, you're wrong here, you're wrong here, you're wrong here. That doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. These are all assertions. And they always rely upon the scripture and the philosophical text to support whatever they say. Lamasong Kapa is sort of famous for this, isn't it? If you look at the long Lamrim's Chenma, you're going to find quotation after quotation, scripture after scripture, mostly all based around Nagarjuna and Chandrakirti and the Buddha. And so they are making assertions. This is pretty, this is okay for everybody, pretty straightforward. At least that first one is, isn't it? It's like completely contradictory. The second one, I think, is very important too. You go, so what are they asserting? You know, lack of inherent existence and dependent origination. How do they come to do that? By relying upon these valid cognitions to teach this view, to assert a view. And then they rely upon scripture and philosophy to support their assertions. So in brief, when we ask, do the middle way consequence have assertions? What's our first answer? Yep, that's right, Carolyn. Yep, that's right. Then they say, give some examples then. So who'd like to go first on giving an example of an assertion? I think you gave one just a little while ago, Carolyn, which was?
Yeah, take a sprout. Uh-huh. Does not exist inherently, right. The reason because it is a dependent arising.
Yep, that's right. Yep. Take a sprout, it does not exist inherently, but it depends upon others, and other refers to, like you're saying, a dependent arising. And lastly, here's another one. So here we have a consequence type way of doing it. So in the other phenomena, when the other people are arguing for inherent existence, they do it like this. They take their view, right? If the phenomena, take a fire, it follows that it exists as either inherently the same or inherently different, as you put it. Why? Because it inherently exists. That's the only way it can exist, if it's inherently existent. It can't exist dependently, can it? The dependence works against inherent existence. So the other person would go, yeah, of course. And then you show how absurd that is. Does this sort of make sense to you? You're going to say, okay, if a fire is inherently exists, it has to be inherently the same or inherently different. If it existed inherently different, what would be the consequences, anybody?
No fire, or perhaps no characteristics of the fire.
Yeah, you'd have, that's right. So you might have a fire. It's like having a fire here and the fire's over there, right? But it's inherently other, inherently different. But they can't be dependent, so they must be inherently different. So there's no fire that exists like that, is there?
So is that the thing where they were talking about it would have to be a context or something, like the fire in the kitchen versus the fire in the wood?
Yeah, that's like, I'm not so sure. Yeah, you might say something like that. I thought, just looking at you as you're going, I thought you're going to go to Nagarjuna's refutation. You know, because they do this thing of, there's an argument in his text, isn't there, about fire and firewood.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And, that's right, it was also smoke. That's right, I was thinking smoke in the kitchen doesn't mean there's a fire in the kitchen or something. Yeah, I got a bit confused because that assertion in green about the fire is a different structure to the sprout, isn't
Oh yeah, for sure. This is there. Yeah, this is
it?
the first one. Is the what would you call it? The this first one? It holds the three parts of a reason. They're all in place, and middle weight constables go fine. That's right. We can use that as the way the autonomous would do it. Autonomous would do this too. The difference is the autonomous would think this whole thing exists autonomously by way of its own character and so forth. And the other guy's going no.
So that second, the sprout could be for the consequent, the autonomous too.
Yeah, that's right. We could take a sprout. It follows that it exists as either inherently the same or inherently different. Why? Because it inherently exists. Take a person. It follows that a person exists as either inherently the same or inherently different. Why? Because it inherently exists. There you go. Okay. Take the person. It follows that it exists as either inherently the same. What would that mean? It means that the person exists from the side of the aggregates, doesn't it? They are the same as the aggregates. They're the same as the body and mind. Because it's inherently the same. There's no difference. If you take that, then this phenomena we call body and mind are already two phenomena, and they're made up of all these parts, and then we've got, I don't know, 50 million different persons. So that's the problem with being inherently the same. If they're inherently different, we have a person existing apart, separate from the body and mind. And so this is this is how you sort of do it.
But it says, right, I'm confused.
Yeah, it's all right, because it's not easy to get your head around this stuff. The consequential reasoning, especially when it's done live like we're doing it, it's like really
good.
Whenever you hear Gessler do it, it's like, I'm lost pretty much immediately. It's like such a jolt. And you're going, this, what? And you go, yeah, it doesn't make sense, does it?
No.
And that's right. That's the point. That's what the middle way you're pointing out. It doesn't make sense.
Right. So this is the middle way consequence saying that the fire example doesn't make sense that the autonomous are putting forward.
That's right.
Right. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Got it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they're saying this idea of autonomous or inherent existence doesn't make sense. And the way they do it is like this. That's like, so we're looking at going, this doesn't make sense. You go, you're right. That's what they're trying to do to you, to get a go like, hang on a minute.
Yeah. Because it's like the definition, Carolyn, that you may have missed, is that it's, they use the consequence to express a contradiction so that the person can develop that inference themselves. That's sort of the definition in the text.
Yeah, let's just say it like that. That's the whole idea behind this. Yeah, they sort of say, look, we don't need them to inherently exist. In fact, if we take them that way, it's a huge mess of contradiction. So, you know, when we said before, so the middle way autonomous to say, look, you know, these valid cognizers, right? They are, inherent existence is appearing to them, or existence by way of their own character or from their own side. That's what's appearing to them. It's valid. That's valid. Middle way consequence says no. This appearance of inherent existence, it has no reality. And so the way of showing that it doesn't actually really exist is to take the others, is to say, well, okay, let's take your point of view. Let's say that they do inherently exist as you're saying they do. And if they do inherently exist, this is the only way they can inherently exist. They're inherently the same or they're inherently different. If we don't get one of those two, there's no inherent existence. And I find it much easier to do with the person than the fire or the sprout, you know. That probably takes a bit more thinking about, okay, if we take inherently the same, that's pretty straightforward. Because you've got all these parts, you know, straight away, whatever the object is, got all these parts, and no part is the same as any other part. Well, then you've got 50 million, billion plants there or persons there or something like that. You go, no, no. Okay, they must be inherently different. Well, now you've got another problem, because something can happen to one and it won't affect the other. It's like, say, you know, something could affect the parts of the plant, but it doesn't affect the plant. Why? Because the plant is inherently other. So related to ourselves, it's like saying, yeah, something could happen to my mind or my body, but it doesn't affect me. Because we exist inherently other. So we often do appear to ourselves to be either the body and mind or something separate. And we can use this tape, well, let's just accept that, and now we have a look at the consequences. And we find we can't stand up. Okay, so now we come up to number four. I'll just read how I've written this. So there are a number of these different misinterpretations, and here we're going to be talking about the third misinterpretation. It says that people who hold the third misinterpretation say middleway consequentialists advance consequences only in terms of the perspective of others. They also, the middleway consequences, do not accept autonomous reasons to realize that things lack inherent existence. Yeah. So why does Lama Tsongkhapa say that this would mean they are not middleway autonomists, but also that they are not even proponents of the middle way? So basically the argument is sort of going like this. So I thought this might be a way to help us, and so we can look at it. So what does it say? This first one says, so they do not accept the autonomous reasons to realize things lack inherent existence on the conventional level. That's true. So in other words, they say, like, so they deny autonomous reasons. If you do this, right, then they assert only consequences from the perspectives of others. They claim no system whatsoever. And there's a contradiction here. Actually, because you've knocked out both sides by doing this, taking these three points that came before it. There's no middle way here now. You've knocked out the middle way consequentialists, and you've knocked out the middle way autonomists. So there's no coherent middle way proponents at all if you do that. So in brief, by putting forward this assertion, they've knocked out the middle way autonomists, and then they've gone ahead and knocked out the middle way consequentialists. So then, like Lama Tsongkhapa says, so where's the middle way then?
But how did they assert consequences are only from the perspective of others? Like, where on earth did they get that from?
From this idea that the middle way don't have an assertion. So if you don't have an assertion, you must only be knocking that from the point of view of others, right? It's like, you know, you have an assertion, Caroline, and I just listen to it, then I refute it. But I don't have any of my own. Yeah. So this is, it's funny, like some of the material I've read in the other traditions, not Lama Tsongkhapa's tradition, there's stuff like that in there. It's sort of shocking. It's like, so like, and they actually say that there is no actual position. And you go, yeah, that's the way it was before Lama Tsongkhapa came in. Yeah, so this is like, you know, so yeah, I think we've gone through the text and said there were people like of his time, of his peerage, his peers. After this period, there's many mistakes about the middle way. And so Lama Tsongkhapa is this great, I don't know what they call these, but, you know, the people that sort of come along, they change the whole idea of it. A reformer, a great reformer. So primarily, he says, the Lama Tsongkhapa demonstrate that those holding this misinterpretation are not middle-way autonomists because they explicitly reject autonomous reasons for establishing emptiness. Right? So you say, what's the middle way? Consequences, isn't it? That's what they do. They say, no, we can't have this because phenomena don't actually inherently exist. So to go, it's the middle way, consequenceless then. But then they say, these guys have got no system and they make no assertions. You go, well, no, that's not a middle way consequentialist. So they're not middle way consequentialist and they're not middle way autonomist. That's what they're sort of getting at here. So this is a mistake, he's sort of saying. This is not the middle way. So authentic consequentialists do make conventional assertions while rejecting inherent existence. And consequentialists do use valid cognition to establish conventional truths. And consequentialists have their own system of valid establishment, even if it differs from the autonomists. And so we know that their own system of valid establishment is one of consequence. So in brief, these people who hold this misinterpretation sort of contradicts itself. That's the problem here. You know, it's a contradiction in itself. So Lama Tsongkhapa goes out, that's a contradiction. No, this is the misinterpretation. So I just sort of summarize this. So these two Buddhist middle way schools, they differ in argumentation style. Autonomists use syllogisms to accept a conventional inherent existence. Consequentialists use reductio arguments, rejecting inherent existence entirely. So the autonomists accept conventional inherent existence in debates. Consequentialists reject it. So one of these things you could say, the middle way autonomists accept inherent existence conventionally, but not ultimately. So creating a two-tier emptiness, which is uncommon in Buddhism. The middle way consequentialists, they reject autonomous syllogisms because using inherent existence components contradicts the emptiness they aim to prove. And basically, Tsongkhapa clarified that consequentialists do make assertions, but only conventionally. You know, they don't posit inherently existent entities. Anything anybody would like to say or ask? So remember, folks, this is the first time you've gone through this. It is not easy, that's for sure. And some of it is just going to settle on the very top of your mental continuum, and by tomorrow and a week it'll be gone. That's just how it works with this material. Unless you sort of, like later on tonight, go through it again and then tomorrow and sort of try and think it through and try and get more material, it just goes. But then perhaps you do it again and then it's like, oh, a little bit stays. So the mind will change, but don't expect change like first time just because you hear it. And even if you say, I understand, that understanding can easily slip away too.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing going through these questions. I thought maybe the second or third time I go through this, I might sink in a bit more.
Yeah, for sure, Bruce. It's
just the start, you know.
Yeah. That's what usually happens. In fact, I was having a conversation with Ian yesterday or the day before, and he was saying, so he listened to Miffy present material on the Dharmakaya, and he was saying, I get it. I got it, right? And she's, but this is the third time he's gone through. Yeah, that's how it works. You know, it just works like that. Yeah. And I think for my, I think we know this, but sometimes we forget, isn't it?
But I suppose it's sort of like holding what the purpose of understanding the difference between the consequentialists and the autonomous, that sort of, you know, basically to be a middleway consequence is the sort of really saying there is no inherent existence, and really, you know, settling that down and understanding the consequences. I mean, I think for me, this stuff has really highlighted an understanding of what consequence means and what autonomous means. Like, autonomous really indicates, oh, right, so you think autonomous, everything's inherently existing at the conventional level, as you know, autonomous. So I think just holding on to what consequence means and autonomous means, and you
I suggest that's enough at this level, right? Just hold on to that, then the other things will come into play. But we've got to hold to something. And so try and find the most simplest practical way you could get at it. Like for instance, Carol, you know, one time we were saying, you and I were talking, and you were saying something about, well, I don't understand why the middleway autonomous keep doing this. You know, we know it's like this. And I was going, yeah, that's right, but it still appears to us. You know, these valid conditions that the middleway autonomous are talking about, they're saying, you know, these conventional cognizers like vision, for instance.
Yes, that's right.
As if they autonomously exist, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. I was saying, you know, that we see the autonomous position appears, but logically we know it's ingrained.
So this is very good when we have, this is really beneficial to us, because we will know, most people we ever talk to will have no inkling about this. They will all be taking at minimum, they will have not the middleway consequence point of view, that's for sure. It'll be autonomous and below, because this is the way things appear to them, and they will buy into the appearance. You know, it's like it's valid to see. The wall is blue. The blue's over there. The phenomena are existing from their own side. All these different little terms. You know, it certainly looks that way, and most people are behaving that way. So in other words, they're saying, we would know, gee, for a middleway consequence, you're grasping that phenomena have inherent existence. You're believing that the phenomena are existing in the way they appear to you. And you will know they don't. They don't exist that way. So you can sort of like, we don't have to be so defensive. In fact, we don't even have to really push them to go, you're wrong, and da-da-da-da-da, right? If we did that and tried to use reasoning, that normal reasoning, it's not going to work, is it? We'd have to use consequentialist reasoning, you know, a consequence of taking your view. And now what's the consequence of that? You know, and then we'd go through taking, you know, understand they don't actually know that what they're getting at is inherent existence. They think conventionally things do inherently exist. That's what their arguments were. That's why I have so much argy-bargy, right? Each of us thinks, oh, the phenomena exist. You know those ideas sometimes when people, you have to make colour choices, and they look at the wall and one person's going, oh, man, that's bloody terrible. You know, and you go like, you know, if you ask them, what's so bad about it? They'll talk about the phenomena, won't they? But if you see those little things where you talk about the terrible colour, it looks like that, and then you put another colour next to it, and now that the first colour looks great. Right? So that shows you, sure, it's not coming from the side of the colour. Right? It's got something to do with me, with my vision, with that other colour sliding next to it. It's dependent arising. Right? It's not intrinsically existent. It's not just the colour. It's got all these dependencies. And they'll probably go, yeah. straight away, it's like no impact. Unless you sort of, think it through. Anyway, this is our meditation, and then we'll have a little break. We'll come up and do the last four slides. So please, just get comfortable in your seats. Sort of straighten your back and drop your shoulders. You put your hands wherever you like. Make sure they're comfortable. And then just sort of close your eyelids, but just if you like, just let a little bit of light come through. And let your body breathe itself. And as you inhale and exhale, let your mind become increasingly clear. So like a mirror that will perfectly reflect reality without distortion. The mind is clear and bright. And being clear and bright, generate a motivation to understand the profound middle way for the benefit of all beings who are caught up in their misconceptions, their wrong ideas. So we're going to think about the nature of assertion and non-assertion in the middle way tradition. So the key insight from the section we've been studying is that consequentialists do make conventional assertions. And while making conventional assertions, they reject that phenomena exist inherently. And without this nuanced understanding, the middle way consequentialists would fall into nihilism. They'd be unable to explain a path to liberation. And saying that consequentialists make no assertions is like claiming someone doesn't speak while they're explaining why they don't speak. This very act undermines the claim. It's like saying, I don't speak, I don't talk at all because blah, blah, blah. That is an assertion. So what happens when we confuse rejecting inherent existence with rejecting all assertions? It's like saying again, rejecting inherent existence means rejecting all assertions. What would happen? We'd lose the ability to distinguish conventional truth from ultimate truth. Does this understanding transform your view of reality? Because this understanding reveals how things can exist conventionally without existing intrinsically. So this is a type of wisdom. Understanding that phenomena can exist conventionally without having any intrinsic nature. So how might we apply this wisdom daily? What's a simple way of applying the understanding? One simple way would be by recognizing that words have meaning without requiring an absolute existence. So we could carry this understanding into our life. We understanding that life has meaning, but the meaning has no intrinsic existence. That we have purpose in life, but the purpose does not exist intrinsically. In this way, we can distinguish between a conventional truth and emptiness of intrinsic nature. And so I want this wisdom that we're developing to illuminate the path we're developing, freeing each of us from the extremes of eternalism, or reification, and nihilism. Okay, so this question is a good one, and you'll probably all be able to answer it. The question is, for the middle way consequentialists, what does autonomous mean? So Bruce, would you like to try that first?
Yeah, autonomous means existing by one's own character.
That's it. That's right, and you can follow that through. So, yeah, that's the major one. Existence by way of their own characteristics, by way of their own character, and by implication, inherent existence. That's fine with everybody. It's quite clear, isn't it? It means that the subject, the predicate, the reason, have their own intrinsic nature. Three modes of a reason exist by way of their own character. So then it says the middle way consequences do not accept middle way autonomous reasons. It says if a correct reason is one which fulfills the three modes, why do middle way consequences then not accept autonomous reasons? Chris, would you like to do this one?
Yes, so the middle way consequence don't accept this particular reason, because we don't accept that the three modes exist from their own side. That forms part of the reason.
Yeah, that's right. That's basically it. Do middle way consequences accept correct reasons fulfilling the three modes of a reason? So you know the way these syllogisms are set up, they've got three modes. Do the middle way consequences accept the three modes of a reason? Yeah, Carol, that's right. They do. They do. The only thing they don't accept is that these three modes exist autonomously. Middle way consequences use the three modes all the time, and it's a valid way of reasoning. So I've got down here, autonomous syllogisms require that the subject, reason, and logical pervasion, those are the three things, be established as appearing similarly for both debating parties. And this implies that those elements exist by way of their own characteristics. And that's why middle way go, no. They exist, they're useful, but they don't exist by way of their own characteristics. It's great. Autonomous syllogisms require the subject, reason, and logical pervasion be established as appearing similarly for both debating parties. This implies autonomous existence. So I had a discussion with a German philosopher last weekend. We were talking about truth, and he had such a completely different explanation of what truth was, and I was sort of going like, this is just so big and so out there, like I can't hold on to the concepts. So I was going to go like, so we need to just pause for, what is your definition of truth? You know, so I was trying to get this thing just like this, so that we both have that the reason is accepted by both of us. And it's of course like when you do these, like using syllogisms in debate, it's what the guy, you know, for the middleway consequence go, we don't have to, it's not necessary. The three modes need to be in play to make a logical statement, but they don't need to intrinsically exist. And he said, they're sort of saying by this idea of agreement, we're actually inferring that they do inherently exist. So here's another interesting term. So what does it really mean to say that things are posited from the perspective of others? Who would like to have a go at this? Caroline, do you have a clue of this one? Okay. Chris?
Yeah, it means that things don't exist inherently, that things are simply posited through language and conception and do not exist from their own side whatsoever.
Yep, that's exactly right. Bruce, is there anything you'd like to add to it?
I just put down that it's positing things that you don't hold to yourself for the sake of the dialogue.
So this is from the commentary, right? So positing from the perspective of others means acknowledging that conventional phenomena are designated as such in conventional experience and discourse. But the ultimate nature, lack of inherent existence, is established through reasoned analysis within the middleway system itself. So this is how, from the perspective of others, means like this, being known by a conventional valid cognition. So you guys, I think we already know this, but maybe it's just the way the question was asked. So we're talking about the conventionalities, right? Conventional existence. They have to be known by conventional valid cognition, and these are not contradicted by another conventional reliable cognizer, and they're not discredited by reasoning, analyzing the ultimate. This determines whether something conventionally exists. So,
I don't understand the perspective of others. Who are the others?
Great question. That's what I kept thinking too. That's what I asked. What is the other?
Yeah, because the other could be a autonomous holder or someone who, you know, your German philosopher.
So anybody else was interested in this question? What does this word other mean? What is the other? Just like Caroline said, because I thought the same. What do they mean? What's this other?
I thought in terms of this discussion, it was between the two of the autonomous and consequentialist, so that each would see the other as the other.
Chris, do you have anything to like to add?
I thought it was your opponent in the debate.
Yeah, that's right. This one sort of sounds like, doesn't it, when you go to the other. So you know, in that syllogism, take a sprout. It does not exist inherently. Why? Because it exists dependent upon other. That's what it says, isn't it? So I thought other meant causes and conditions, parts, base and designation. Those were the others. That's not what it means within the context of this discussion. In fact, all of us have got it wrong. Right? And I had no idea, it wasn't straight there in the text. So the other is the three modes of the syllogism. If you think about that, it's quite right, isn't it? You go, so it has to be like a valid cognition, but this valid cognition has to be dependent and empty, not inherently existent. So the other people, so I think one of you might have said this idea of the other being the opponent, isn't it? The autonomist. And they put forward how phenomena exist using the three modes of the syllogism, the three modes. So the middle way consequentialists agree with that, just that they don't exist by way of their own character. So posited from others' perspective means things exist not from their own side, but only as dependently designated by valid conventional awareness. Like a table that exists only because we designate it upon its parts. So there's again this, I guess it's just sort of saying it different ways, that there we have the parts, we have the imputation by language and imputation by conception. And there we have a table. And these are the others. Yeah. So you could say the three modes of the syllogism are the others, or long way of saying causes, conditions, parts, designation. They're the others. So here we have the valid cognition. It's not contradicted by another conventional reliable cognizer. And of course, it can't exist inherently. So now we come to our last. So this sort of was a good question, Carol. So that's what I would like you to do. Like this language, like it looks sort of, what can I say, straightforward, but it might not be. So it's a good idea to sort of question the simplicity of what's appearing to us. Isn't it? It's like questioning the simplicity of what's appearing, right? And assuming, well, it looks like this, it is like that. Yeah. So it's like, okay. Well, let's ask ourselves a question. What is it? What is this actually? What is this other? So, a couple of days ago, I'm doing a slide for a review of death and rebirth, and one of the questions that FPMT have asked is to ask the class, what is the purpose and meaning of life? So my way of looking at this was, first of all, to look back at my own experience. My own experience was that I began looking for intrinsic meaning, intrinsic purpose. Now, we all know that there is no such thing, right? But I started looking for that. That's what I thought was real, intrinsic meaning, real meaning. So I did that many years ago, couldn't find it. And assumed that it didn't exist at all. So this is a great example I find for myself, to going, meaning is a conventionality. I'm looking as if these conventionalities are intrinsically existent. Yet when I go to search for them, I can't find any. And so I slip into the nihilist view, go, there is no meaning then. So I know that's my experience, but what I want to do here was take the opposite view, like the middle way consequence guy. Let's just take this view that meaning and purpose in life, meaning and purpose intrinsically exist. What would be the outcome? So I put that into the AI and spent like 2 hours arguing with it. It was great fun, you know. It said, that's a really interesting question. I've not thought of it that way. Then it would follow like this, and this would happen. And I just kept hammering at it, you know. And so I said, like, is there no intrinsic existence of meaning whatsoever? And they said, well, there are religions hold that there is intrinsic meaning and intrinsic purpose for us. There are philosophies that hold that there is intrinsic meaning and purpose for us. So then I said, well, what would be the consequence if such an intrinsic meaning or purpose were to exist? So I ask you guys, what would be the consequence of meaning or purpose in your life were to intrinsically exist? What do you think? What would be one of the most, Chris, great, you got to think up, what would be one of the outcomes?
Oh, it would be fixed and permanent and unchanging.
That's right. And what else? That's exactly right. And going along with that one, what else? But you're quite right. There's a little bit more you could add.
It'd be universal, same for everyone.
Exactly, Bruce. That's the one. That's right. So, yeah, it'd be universal, and we'd all know it. It'd never change, and it wouldn't go away. So, you go, so is that our experience? Yeah, no. So, okay. That's one thing. What's the other thing? That's right. So that's intrinsically the same. Now what? It's like the meaning intrinsically has these qualities. So just like you said, permanent, blah blah blah, impossible. That's not our experience. What's the next one?
We would all be the same.
In what way? What way, Chris?
In terms of, so I'm just thinking this through. So if we all grasp at the inherent existence, we thought it was real, and that was the ultimate purpose. I think ultimately, though, all of our ultimate goal would be the same, to try and achieve the same thing, Eddie. Because it's unchanging. Okay, sort of hot.
Yeah. So this is the thing. This is where it's very useful to just do. If a phenomenon intrinsically exists, it can either intrinsically exist as same or different. Right? So we've all done like the same, permanent, universal, all these sort of things. There's another similarity, another sameness that we haven't come to yet. It is, we would not be able to know it. Somebody tell me why. If truth and purpose intrinsically existed, one of the outcomes, one of the consequences of that type of existence, I'm saying is we would be unable to know it. Chris?
Because it is different and it's not, so if you had a truth and it is different from the truth and not part of the truth, it would be somewhere else and it would be different for all of us, so we could all not know it.
The reason is that knowing something depends upon something. And dependence is the opposite to intrinsic. It's like saying, if something intrinsically existed, there's no way we could know it because knowing is dependent upon consciousness. So intrinsic is the opposite to dependent. It's not dependent. Intrinsic, inherent, by way of own character, not dependent, has its own, existed within its own sphere, not dependent upon your consciousness and awareness. So there's no way you could even know what the intrinsic purpose of life was or intrinsic meaning, because that depends upon your awareness. So that's if it's intrinsically different. If it were intrinsically the same, we would all know it. It would always stay the same. It would never go out of our mind. So these are the two ways, intrinsic sameness, intrinsic difference. In the Praise to Buddha, the Nagarjuna's, he goes, no coming, no going, no sameness, no difference. That's just saying, no intrinsic coming, no intrinsic going, no intrinsic sameness, no intrinsic difference, and peaceful. Free from that conceptual elaboration, because intrinsic nature has never existed, so the mind has always been free. So I love that little section there, because it's like, just check. If phenomena were to exist intrinsically, there's only two ways, same or different. Or what was the other one we said before? Same and different and... it's escaped my mind, but there's these, it just goes, this, it's not that, there's got to be this, it's not that, it's not intrinsic existed. Yeah, in our take meaning or purpose, it follows that it exists as either inherently the same or inherently different. Why? Because it inherently exists. Then we check. Is it inherently the same? If we said it were, we would all know it. It always stay the same, blah, 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 blah. If it's inherently different, it's not dependent. We can't know it. So you go, no. So that leaves us thinking. So when we do that, what's our conclusion then, folks, about meaning and purpose?
That we can create meaning and purpose.
And don't we?
Yeah.
And that's right. And that's how it exists, right? So just like that kind of, and so imagine the freedom when you know that. Oh my God, what's my purpose? It's up to us. Mm. What's the meaning I give to my life? It's up to us. It's fantastic, isn't it?
Mm.
So now we come to our last question. It's about this, again, a misunderstanding of the third, a misinterpretation. And, whoopsie, it says, so how do those who hold to the third misinterpretation misunderstand from the perspective of others? Basically, it's sort of coming about through a misreading of Nagarjuna. They read it, but they, and their assumption about what they understand is incorrect, is wrong. And through that misunderstanding, they have an invalid object of negation. So it still leaves something to be negated. As you know, in this instance, it's a conventional phenomena inherently exist. Otherwise, they just ignore the conventional reality altogether, and they go, only the ultimate exists. Only the ultimate is true. So this still happens today. In the lineages outside Lava Tsongkhapa, especially in the Sakya tradition, is a great philosopher called Garampa. And Garampa, they say there's two truths, but he actually means there's only actually one. And that's the ultimate truth, because it's actually true. Now, the conventional truth is deceptive, isn't it?
So when he says it's true, does it mean inherently existent?
For which side, Bruce, here?
From the Sakya side.
No. They're sort of saying that only because the ultimate truth actually exists in the way that it appears, that's actually true. Whereas conventional truths, they're not true at all. So there's actually only one truth. One of the major ways that has come about, this is also held by many in the Nyingma lineage also, is because when you start off to investigate the two truths, you ask, so what are the two truths? You know, you start off with your definition. And Lama Tsongkhapa basically, they're objects of knowledge. Other lineages can come out, so that's the object. What if you came at it from the point of view of the subject? And so that's what they do. So I've got these two different ways, and you go, now I understand. That's why they've got these different presentations where they explain, for instance, the Heart Sutra, and you listen to that from Galupa, and then you move across to Shakya. It's like a bit of a shock. You know, it's like, what? Where'd that come from? And it's because the basis they're starting from is different. There's this consciousness. And you remember some time ago, I might have said this a number of times, who's that English nun who did the 13 years in the cave? Tenzin Palmyre. You know, when she first went off to be a nun, and she went to her teacher, and he asked her first, what do you find is easier in terms of emptiness, like a chair or the mind? And her response was the mind. He said, rather, you stay with us. If you'd said a chair or something physical, he would have sent her off to the Galupa Monastery. But because she said the mind was, okay, you're suitable to have this type of philosophical presentation. And so that's mainly Garampa. So the key errors here, misreading Nagarjuna, ignoring the context of Nagarjuna's rejection of inherently established theses, they can claim that middle way have no system whatsoever. An invalid object of negation. They apply arguments against intrinsic existence to conventional existence itself, undermining dependent arising. And that's what I was saying with these other traditions. It's like, these conventional truths, they're not true at all. If you investigate them using reasoning, they don't exist at all. But emptiness does. And ignoring the conventional reality. So some Lama Tsongkhapa emphasizes that unimpaired senses are authoritative for conventional truths, which function without any intrinsic nature. So like I was saying before, you know, so this is a big difference. When Lama Tsongkhapa says that, unimpaired senses are authoritative. The other schools go like, no, they're not. Basically, the third misinterpretation wrongly claims the consequences have no assertions at all. And this is what this third thing's about. And like I said, it's come about through these three major faults. So we'll finish up. We'll do our last, anything interesting. I mean, so I think this stuff is some side a little bit gnarly, a little bit deep. And when you first hear the stuff, it's like you can't even come up with a question. And I figured, well, that's right. It hasn't settled out enough for us to sort of contemplate it. And go, oh, well, this is the question I come up with. So I think the major takeaway from what we've gone on is that the middle way consequences reject inherent existence. So, you know, we know that on the conventional side and the ultimate side. Ultimate truths don't inherently exist, and conventional truths don't inherently exist. Both of these types of truth exist dependently. And the other thing about the middle way consequences is that they maintain that the valid conventional assertions through dependent designation. So embracing dependent designation offers a middle path between the absolute affirmation and denial in everyday ethical decisions. Consequenceless methodology demonstrates how logical discourse remains possible despite the absence of inherently existent phenomena. And recognizing conventional validity without inherent existence allows a deep engagement with experiences and at the same time maintains a sort of philosophical rigor. So again, let's finish off now and we'll do our last meditation, folks. So please, again, just get comfortable in your seat. Let your shoulders drop down. Just check that your head is balanced nicely on your neck. Then let your eyes close and let your body breathe itself. And you might notice how each inhalation and exhalation arises dependently. So each inhalation and exhalation of breath is without inherent existence. Each is dependent upon the other. We want this meditation to deepen our understanding of reality for the benefit of all beings. So now bring your awareness now to the notion of how phenomena exist. Recollect how they do not exist and how they do exist. So take time to say, this is how phenomena do not exist. They don't exist in these ways because of. So the middle way reveals that while things function conventionally, they lack any findable essence when analyzed ultimately. So just as understanding that posited from others' perspective is like recognizing that the value of money exists not in the paper itself, but through collective agreement. The note appears valuable conventionally, But analysis reveals it's just paper given meaning through designation. So how might you be able to distinguish between conventional appearances and ultimate reality in daily life? So just as we use money functionally, while knowing its value is merely designated, we can engage with relationships without grasping at inherent existence. So I wonder, what phenomena do you most strongly grasp at as inherently existent? So there are phenomena that we strongly grasp at to inherently exist. But if we remember the money example, remember too that this other phenomena that you grasp at inherently exists only through designation upon its parts. So how might this understanding free you from the extremes of eternalism and nihilism? We could recognize conventionalities validly to be without inherent existence. And this is like using designated money without believing in its intrinsic value. So to help us deepen our understanding, we could commit ourselves to examining one object of attachment daily through the lens of dependent designation. I was just thinking, think of Mother's Day. When we discover the lack of inherent existence in money, or Mother's Day, or any other conventional phenomena, when we discover that lack, we just rest in the spaciousness. We rest in the absence of the inherent existence. And in your own time now, just let your eyes flicker open and move your body whichever way you wish to. And just bring your awareness back into the room. So it's not 12 questions, we just finished the last 8 and this is day 17 finish. So I'll go on and finish the, prepare the next lot of questions for you and send them out to you. And this is the material we'll be looking at next. Damn. My fault, I should have filled these in. I have a look at Gessler's commentary, and you might see where these are in the Lamrim Chenmo itself, and you're like, okay, that's the section we're in. I'll have that ready for you next week, or next fortnight, and you have a look at it. I'll bring these up to date. Gosh. Okay, so let's dedicate. So just thinking of our teachers, in particular Khyentse Rinpoche, who was primarily responsible for the commentary that we're going through, and Losang Zopa, the commentator, and of course the other Chen Rizik, the people who were at Chen Rizik Institute at the time that typed all this out, wrote it up, discussed it, put forward all the questions. It's only dependent upon their kindness that we can actually study it now. So thinking of them, thinking of your mother today, thinking about all the virtue that we create in dependence upon other sentient beings. Think of all that merit, and then they'll say, due to the merits of our virtuous actions, may we quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, Bodhicitta, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. Now for His Holiness, the wish-granting, wish-fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world, to the incomparably kind Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And for the finding of Lama Zopa Rinpoche, the person who was once in a new rebirth, in holding and spreading the Muni's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience that is never discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Guru, to you, I make this request.